Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. This is the number one global radio show and fintech podcast, or fintech radio show and podcast is probably better to put it that way. I am your host, Brett King. Joining me today in the hosting, co-hosting chair is David Jabino. He's a fintech advisor, voice first advocate, banking consultant with Beyond the Arc, and director of marketing strategy and board member for NiPay, and a longtime fintech mafia pal. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Jabino.
Hey, thank you, Brett. Thanks for having me on today.
Good, good. Now, David, just before we jump into the show, how have you been coping with the whole shut-in and coronavirus stuff?
Oh, that's not something that I've done. I have a side gig where I work in the food services industry at night, and so I've not been.
You've been on the front lines,
home, but yeah, making sure people get food. It's an understatement to say that it's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, we're losing you a little bit there, David, but
I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, all right, cool. All right, so let me just jump through the some of the news before we introduce our guests today. We're going to have John Best, the Chief Digital Officer at Beyond Imagination and co-founder of Best Innovation Group, and Elizabeth Robbins, the Product Director for Big, joining us as well. On the news today, we see that there's still some funding going on. The investing in banking app Stash has raised $112 million in a Series F round today, so that's good news for those guys. We see it's very interesting to see the discussion now about how coronavirus is going to change the world of banking. The CEO of Barclays says that it's the end of skyscrapers. He doesn't think people will be going back to working in a building. In fact, his quote was, this is Stately, Jez Stately, the CEO of Barclays, said, the notion of putting 7,000 people in a building may be a thing of the past. So that's Jez Stately from Barclays. In addition, we see that MasterCard has said that contactless payments have boomed during the coronavirus. So this is pretty clearly going to be some interesting changes. Although the Barclays CEO did say that maybe branches might make a comeback, I'm not sure I agree with that. And we discussed that on last week's show as well. But anyway, so some news coming out of there. FCA has extended the SCA deadline by another 6 months. That's the strong customer authentication rule set that they're working on there. There's really going to have to be a lot more done on identity. That one that has been clear as a result of the coronavirus traction. And FIS has also set up a $150 million fintech venture fund. So they're going to be working with promising fintech startups over the next 3 years. A little late in the process, given the fintech sort of boom has been 10 years in the making, but it's also good to see core players like FIS do that. David, what did you have on the voice news for us?
MasterCard mentioned contactless payments, and I really don't like to call those contactless payments because those are really contactless initiated payments because you're still touching POSs, and I wish that could be solved. But on voice, voicebot.ai released this week their latest study, and we're showing the installed U.S. adult smart speaker installed base is now up to 87.7 million, which is a 32% growth over January 2019's numbers of 66.4. And so those numbers are just growing steadily. Again, that's on a base of 255 million U.S. Adults.
Yeah. And so the, this includes Alexa, Google Home, that sort of tech, right?
Right. Primarily, since it's smart speaker, so it's not the full ecosystem. Oh, I just heard somebody's goes off in the background.
That's mine.
You know, we have daily usage is up slightly over last year to 50%. And what really important is the monthly data over the last 3 years has steadily increased from 3 years ago of 23.5% up to 31%. And so this is great news for those who are adopting, you know, smart speakers, but it's a much more complex ecosystem from when it started, now with screens and greater capabilities on phones and other devices. But it's just all movement in a very positive forward-moving direction. And again, great research from the team at voicebot.ai.
Okay, so we'll try and tweet that out, Cassie, if you're listening there. Just try and tweet that out to people listening to the show right now. All right, let's invite John and Elizabeth on the show. John is obviously a longtime guest. John Best, welcome back to Breaking Banks.
Hey, Brett, thanks for having me.
And Elizabeth, welcome. Elizabeth Robbins, welcome to the show. Have we had you on before?
I was on one other time, yep.
Okay, good. Welcome back then.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, so BIG is positioned as an innovative think tank, credit union integration specialists. You talk about unlocking the ultimate member experience. Of course, when you're in the credit union space, you talk about members, not customers, and by finding the most innovative technology and applying it to the right channel. So you guys have been working with voice and touchless technologies and so forth. So let's start off, John, by, you know, how are credit unions responding to the coronavirus crisis? And, you know, what have you been doing in terms of sort of trying to get them together in a community sense to talk about these issues and look at solutions?
Sure. Well, what have we been doing? I'll start there. We started actually a town hall. When this first hit, I was, kind of thinking, gee, I don't know what to do here. I'm not sure. I don't have a lot of good advice. And that's where I thought, you know, the best thing I could do is use the platform that we have with our big cast and you and everyone else and pull together a free town hall meeting where we use Zoom. And we started off by just giving everybody 5 minutes. Every credit union, if you showed up, just talk to us. Tell us what you're facing. And the idea was to share good and bad ideas, to use the chat to encourage collaboration amongst the folks. And that went really, really well and has been going now. We just did our 11th one, believe it or not. We did two a week to begin with. We dropped it down to one a week. But we've just done our 11th one this week, and we had about 40 different organizations show up. So what ends up happening in those is that people share what they're facing. And Cranes, by and large, have done some pretty amazing things. For instance, out in your neck of the woods, Aspire Credit Union, a friend of mine, Thomas O'Shea, when the stimulus checks came in, as you know, that was a fiasco because most of the ACH and the product of, or the ACH routing information was set up a long time before, and many of those were closed accounts or not there anymore. And, you know, instead of just bouncing those back at the IRS and sending them into oblivion, which may never come back, they called every one of those members. They chased them down. They said, listen, wow, I got this check for you. And that's the kind of thing I thought was pretty cool and a big differentiator in this space. The other thing is, obviously, they've closed branches. And, you know, they're dealing with, it's just a continuous change. You know, you and I have talked before that the number one catalyst for change is catastrophe. And we certainly have seen more change in the past month than we've ever seen. And there are things you predicted some time ago, Brett, in your books and whatnot, where the transition to digital has been overwhelming. And not only are you seeing new users, but what you're seeing is that the percentage of active users, the people who are using digital, they're all showing up at once. So you've got all these sort of dormant digital users who tried it once, didn't like it, said, no, I'm still going to get in my car and drive to the branch or go through the drive-thru, who don't have that option anymore and have been forced into the digital space, have realized that the service there is good and they can use it. but it's building a large amount of bandwidth and taking up a lot of resources to where they're not, no one really is set up to get 100% of their active user community or even 150% of their active user community, particularly and looking for, in this economic situation, their stimulus checks and whatnot. But by and large, you know, the credit unions have been facing these things one at a time. You know, if you're a New York credit union or California credit union, it's not trivial to protect a stimulus check. And what I'm talking about is you get the stimulus check and it's not supposed to be garnished in any way. Well, what does that really mean? You know, if a member has drawn themselves over with overdraft fees, right? Do you take that? Do you not? What does that look like? How do you deal with it? I mean, another good example is, hey, let's just turn off Reg D. Yeah, that sounds easy, but you know, all the digital solutions actually monitor for Reg D. And so, what do you do with, you know,
for those outside of the change? US, could you describe Reg D?
Sure, Reg D is meant to be a It's basically a throttle on the number of electronic transactions you could perform out of a savings account. And the purpose of it is to make sure that people, you know, differentiate a savings account from a checking account. You know, the two financial utilities are different things. We give higher interest on the savings account because it's supposed to be a savings account. So Reg D was put into place where I believe you can now visit five or six, Elizabeth. I think it's five. Five transactions a month. And after that, you can't make any more electronic transactions if you follow the rules. And that's to prevent you from using it as sort of a checking account and allowing the financial institution to have some, you know, to have some confidence that that money will stay in that savings account to give the rate that they need to give. And they're changing that, not surprisingly, because of what's going on, including things like breaking CDs, and they're allowing people to do that. So it has been a whirlwind every week, besides installing sneeze shields and preparing for reopening and adding stickers to the floor, getting rid of all the pens and the paper. And it's an unbelievable, every time I have one of these calls, I'm just absolutely amazed at the challenges everybody's facing and how they're living up to it and how they're organizing themselves and acting on behalf of their membership.
And, you know, how has this impacted interest in other digital solutions? Are we starting to see, you know, credit unions starting to get out of the mindset that member service now, because member service has always been primarily focused on the branch, but and now people starting to think about how to service members, how to engage members beyond the branch?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, one of the things we launched this year at Big was a product category we call ACE, which is API Connections Experts. And we realized that, and we were prescient in a way, that many of the home banking providers and you know, they serve the middle-sized tier of financial institutions, regardless of whether they're community banks or credit unions, you know, they have a lot of built-up, pent-up demand in terms of features and services. And so realizing that most of them have an SDK, we looked at, hey, could we go out and certify with these folks and then do that work, you know, on behalf of credit unions who want to individualize themselves or separate themselves in the digital space? And what we're finding right now is there's a desperate move to do that. Like, they're realizing that, one, members or customers, however you want to put it, are much more, they're much more likely to embrace a new solution right now. So, you know, you get more traction on a digital solution at this moment than you would if you, you know, rolled it out during normal circumstances. They're also much more tolerant, which has always been an issue, especially in the credit union space, because they're so risk averse. So they're always concerned about, you know, perfect being the enemy of good. You know, and understanding that iterative process to creating a new product or a platform. So as they've seen that the membership is asking for these things, they're more tolerant, they're starting to move in that direction. They're starting to look at things like the voice solutions, realizing that, branch closures is very difficult to get out there, you know, in the sense of, you know, communicating to your members. And one thing, you know, is if you drive all the way out somewhere and it's just closed, you know, what's the odds of you going back again, you know? It's so, you know,
I think there's not a real acceptance as yet that these branch closures that are temporary could easily become permanent as a result of sort of this behavioral shift. I don't think as yet there's sort of a broad acceptance of that.
Yeah, I think there's two prongs to that, right? The first prong is all these folks that have moved over to digital. Okay, so what's left that they would have to go to the branch to? And, you know, loans are down. We've seen a knockdown of loans around 20%. We surveyed all the grains that come to the town hall. We asked them about their projects. We said, okay, so what percentage of projects would you say that you're going to postpone or cancel based on the current pandemic? And most of them said about 30%. They would, you know, and 70% would stay intact. But none of them are cutting their budget because they're reusing those projects for other things. But going back to the branch side of it, as they're understanding, one, people can now do these things and recognize they do them digitally. So you're losing a swath of the membership or the normal traffic. But the second thing is, do they even feel safe? You know, anything, whether it's a restaurant or whatever, if you reopen it, it doesn't matter whether you reopen it. You can't force people to go there. So until people feel safe to go there, I think those two things kind of create a really balancing act. And I wonder if you jump the gun too soon, you're going to wind up closing down those branches because you can't sit there for, you know, weeks and months on end with nobody coming, right?
Okay, so let's get to talking about the voice market in particular. You know, the demand from consumers for voice experiences within the banking environment, clearly based on the data we see that David has shown, has increased. Explain how this platform you've got called the Five platform is making waves in the voice first solutions. And maybe Elizabeth, you can jump in here as well.
Sure. You know, one of the things that I think people crave in times like this is information. They want as much information as they can get about what's going on in everything that affects their lives, and banking is no exception to that. So I feel like people are scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. And I've seen this in my own personal life with members of my family who are like, well, I went to my credit union to get some money out because I want to have some cash on hand. And that's another thing that we've seen a lot of is people wanting to stockpile cash right now. But, you know, they're like, I went to the credit union to get some money out and they were closed. And I said, well, why didn't you just go to the ATM? And she's like, oh, I've never used the ATM before. I need a big amount of cash. And I just go to the teller and she takes it out of my account. So, you know, needing to get that information about what to do and how to do it is so critical right now. And so, you know, I've been recommending to a lot of our clients that they update their voice applications in particular, but also their websites, not just with, you know, here's how COVID is affecting us, but let's be specific. You know, we need to give people information about what branches are open, what branches are closed, using the drive-throughs, how to use, and here's a, you know, a big thing is not just ATMs, but ITMs, these teller machines that are video enabled and allow people to interact with the staff in different ways. So all of this is information that needs to be conveyed to the community. And I think having voice apps is the easiest way to do that. If somebody can ask their voice device, you know, what can you tell me about XYZ financial institution? And it comes back and says, you know, try, you know, this particular skill. In order to get that information, they can enable it and start asking questions really quickly. And the more COVID-related information about operational changes that's available through that venue, the better it is for people in the community. So to me, that's a really huge thing that people need to be taking advantage of right now.
And just to put a little on that, so, you know, Brett, if you said, you know, I'm not going to say it because it'll wake it up, but hey, you know, speaking device, tell me about Heritage Valley Credit Union, right? That, you know, it's going to go out. You don't get the luxury, like if you typed it into a browser, to pick from the search that came back and give you which Heritage Valley Credit Union. So it may give you answers from, it'll say, I found this on the web, and it'll read, how many times have you asked, and it does that, and it turns out it's not anything applicable. You know, so This is a way. What we started is basically.
So this is sort of about owning that sort of keyword terms, right?
Like
the old days of registering domain name for the first websites.
Yeah,
very similar.
Yeah, and we've created it. We can have that up and running. So let's say you go, we have two sites. We have a FI voice registry, because we do this for banks and community banks as well. And we have the CU voice registry. You can go, you can buy your name, and we will put up that site with the information for you without, you know, because that's the other thing is they don't have time. Ukrainians are struggling about, you know, the projects they do because everybody's so busy. But this is one of those where we don't even need to bug you. We'll get all the information from the website, set it up, get it out there, and get it approved. And we've been doing it in less than 2 days for most people. It's that quick, and it's not super expensive. It's anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 a year, and it's up and running. Now, if you want to take that to the next level, this is where Five really jumps in. This is our platform called Five, which is Financial Interactive Voice Experience. It will then allow you to access your account information, which is a little bit more involved, obviously. That's like a home banking on a voice platform. But the magic of it is it's not just one. It does it for both. It does it for Google. It does it for Alexa. And we can add in other connectors, like eventually just regular chats, like if you want to use it in Discord. You know, I don't know about you, but if you got kids, they're in Discord. That's where they spend all their time gaming, and that's the platform they use to talk back and forth while they're gaming. They never use the platforms that are, you know, as part of the gaming system.
Yeah, Discord is pretty big. David, what do you know about the voice stuff that's happening outside of the U.S.?
So, not as much as I would like to know, to be perfectly honest, but I will tell you this: regardless of what part of the world you're in, voice is huge, and it's primarily because it's the natural user experience and interface
yeah.
that we're all born into. And you know, with some of the examples that John and Elizabeth just gave, it's challenging. And you know, for a lot of people, they associate voice with a smart speaker, and smart speaker is just a small component of an overall voice strategy that right. banks and credit unions should be really, or actually really any brand should be looking to employ, you know, and it starts with their brand. You know, part of the brand should be the audio experience, and
right.
very few banks are doing that, and brands in particular. And audio branding is not new. It is a decades old practice, but it was only done by those rare few who truly understood the full
impact. Like the Intel Inside little ditto and things,
for,
right?
Exactly, for tech geeks, yeah. And it's in the payments
space. Microsoft startup, sound. Yeah, there's a lot of audio branding.
For many of those things, absolutely.
And NBC.
Yeah. And we have these rich, you know, pieces of audio that can go along to represent the brand, particularly when the visual goes away. You know, and John had mentioned about the whole search criteria. Well, part of what banks can be doing today and credit unions can be doing today is enhancing their websites to be voice enabled by the underlying data structures that exist through schema.org. And those are very important things that should be going on. And you know, banks should be looking, and really all brands, to an overarching voice strategy for both customer facing, but also what they can do to improve their back office automation as well.
You know,
one
thing too, I'm seeing, and this is just personal experience, but I know it's true. So my mom is in a nursing home here in Colorado Springs, where I live, and the nursing home happens to be the brand. The company that runs it is the same company that ran the first, if you remember, all this started in Washington in a nursing home. And that company runs a bunch of different nursing homes. It happens to be that brand. And, you know, my mom can't get out to deal with her Social Security checks and things, but she's got a lot of that automated. But having a touchless technology for a senior, you know, because we've always said, oh, people always, you know, one of the things we always, Brett, you and I used to kind of rail against was, this is just for millennials. These mobile apps are just for millennials. They're too difficult for older people to use, which was never true. But wow, the barriers have really been torn down in the senior space by these platforms. They really like them. They see them as almost like friends. It's companionship in some cases in these models.
Absolutely. So when we talk about the voice stuff that's going on, you know, when we talked about and this is sort of the last thing I want to get covered off before the break probably. But when do you think we start to see the emergence of chief voice officers at big brands?
Well, if you're throwing that at me, I would kind of go against David with not against him, but I would throw this against what he's saying. I think that voice is part of an entire brand strategy, and so to me that would be. I think we could see something like that, but it would be in relation to an overall brand strategy / digital strategy. Because the one thing that I want to be careful of, and one of the things we're seeing with Cradians, is how can we direct some of this traffic elsewhere to other channels that would be valuable to us, is I want to be careful of creating an expectation in the space where we have yet another siloed service that doesn't communicate with the rest of the services.
Right.
For example,
right.
You start a loan app, and a loan voice app is something we've been working on for the last year and a half. It's not simple, but we're working on it. But you don't want that loan voice app to not translate if you call into the call center and you want to ask about it.
All right.
So for me, that's how I would brand it.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well,
I was going to say it needs to be totally ubiquitous. It's the data needs to be centrally accessed, because you're right. It doesn't matter how a customer touches a brand, that central repository needs to be integrated via all touch points, and voice is definitely one of those that should be
just
touching that central repository.
And I would throw in even with preferences. So for example, to your point about the international preferences, what a great way to interact with bilingual customers and members, where you can already have the preference set to their language of choice in your platform.
I mean, having been a customer of HSBC in Hong Kong for many years, I never could figure out why they couldn't send me emails in English instead of Cantonese, or simplified, traditional Chinese. But anyway, listen, guys, before we get to the break, I've got to give a shout out to a few of our sponsors. So bear with me for a couple of minutes. My thanks to Fiverr, who has been a regular sponsor of the show for some time. Where do you go to find talent during coronavirus? How much does it cost? How can you be certain they'll be deliver? Well, thanks to Fiverr, finding the right freelancer, creative talent doesn't have to be a struggle. Fiverr's marketplace helps you get more done with less. It connects businesses with freelancers who offer hundreds of digital services, including graphic design, copywriting, web programming, film editing. You can probably even get Alexa voice skill architects of Fiverr as well. You'll know exactly what you're paying for up front, no negotiation needed, and a 24/7 customer service capability there. So take five and check out Fiverr.com, and you'll receive 10% off your first order using our exclusive code BREAKING. It's so easy. Don't waste any more time and get the service you deserve going to Fiverr.com, code BREAKING. Fiverr, it starts here. Jack Henry is also a great supporter of Breaking Banks. Jack Henry Digital is the pioneer and creator of personal digital banking that helps community financial institutions translate their trust and live local personal service meaningfully into digital channels. Jack Henry Digital also helps community financial institutions strategically differentiate their digital offerings from those of the mega banks and the big tech and fintechs. How do they do it? Well, it's with their Banno digital platform, a complete 100% API-enabled open digital banking platform. You get lightning-fast native apps, integrated PFM, you get cloud-based core-connected back-office tools for employees, and with the website marketing and content management capabilities built into their community, you can launch, track, and target campaigns quickly from click-through to product acquisition. Don't forget to also check out Banno Conversations, a first-of-its-kind, fully authenticated, secure chat capability that enables branch staff to connect digitally with customers. You want to check it out? You really have to see this in action. Visit Banno.com to schedule a demo today. That's Banno.com. And a new sponsor that's come in and joined us this week is Shippo for e-commerce business. If you're working in the e-com space, shipping in 2 days or less is the new standard as a growing business. How can you keep up? Well, this is where Shippo comes into play. Now, Shippo is the only shipping software for growing businesses that you can set up in minutes starting today. They ship hundreds of millions of packages. They offer volume discounts
discounts up to 90% off the typical carrier rates. And they do this by doing bulk ordering with carriers like UPS, USPS, FedEx, and DHL. Your orders are automatically pulled in from your system and into Shippo. They have automated return labels that are free. You only pay if your customers use them. And companies that use Shippo are already saving thousands of dollars. And on average, you can grow 70% a year over year with your shipping capabilities with their platform. Over 100,000 companies are using the service. For our listeners, they're offering their best discount available anywhere. Get a shipping consultation and Shippo Pro Plan 6-month trial for free at goshippo.com/fintech. That's up to $700 worth of value for free at goshippo.com/fintech. That's goshippo.com/fintech. Go right now, get your free shipping consultation and Pro Plan 6-month trial. That's it for Breaking Banks for this segment. We'll be back right after this break. And thanks for sticking around with us. So back in a moment.
Hi, I'm John Best, author of Breaking Digital Gridlock. Do you know what the greatest catalyst for change is? That's right, it's catastrophe. Right now, people who have never used or rarely used digital banking are using it for the first time. And they are discovering a whole new world of financial services that are available to them without having to go to a branch or call the call center. Transition to digital services has been accelerated, and now is the time to accelerate your digital transformation. Go to bdg-academy.com to check out my video course on how to shift your culture, your people, and most importantly, your strategy. That's bdg-academy.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King, and with us on this week's show is in the hosting chair today is David Jabino from NiPay and a bunch of other organizations. David, thanks for joining us. John and Elizabeth from Big are with us too. John, before we get into sort of the post-coronavirus world and how voice and all of this is going to be affected by coronavirus, let me just, I know, you know, David gave us a brief, you know, message before. He's been working in the food services space, coordinating food deliveries, you know, to people and so forth in his spare time. Well, not really spare time. He's been burning the midnight oil doing that. But I also understand you guys have been using 3D printers to help out frontline medical staff. Can you explain that?
Sure. So it all started with one of our employees. His girlfriend, his wife, his first wife passed away a year ago. And his girlfriend has two daughters, and both of them work in the healthcare space, and they did not have any PPE, the protective gear that you need to help people in hospitals. They're both nurses.
Right. Personal protective equipment, right?
Yep. And so he called me, and we were just chatting about it, and I had been working with Harry, Dr. Harry Clore, on the Beyond Imagination Avatar platform. And we have a whole bunch of 3D printers because we're printing out pieces of these robots, which are, you know, actually part of this as well. And I asked him, I said, hey, I've been looking online. There's these places where it looks like you can print some masks. Do you mind if I use our printers to print some masks for my friends? And he not only said yes, he said, well, you know, I was looking too, and there's people around. So I checked online. I found a Twitter account called Masks for Docs. DOCS, and we could tweet that out. And that pointed me at Make for COVID, which is here in Colorado. and I connected with a group where we print out, we haven't really been printing out the N95 masks or masks at that level because those haven't really been proven to be as clear. What we've been doing is assembling face shields. So I print out X amount right. of a certain part, and I deliver it to a warehouse, and there's a structure and a protocol to follow. We wear the PPE gear, we enclose them, we make sure they're not infected. Then I take them there, they get assembled with another piece. And you've seen these, they're the white kind of looking face shields, you know, that, but what's interesting is they're made out of parts you can get from Staples and a 3D printer. And we've delivered, you know, they've delivered thousands of them at this point. And I don't know, I've probably contributed a couple hundred, just constantly printing.
Okay, so let's get into some of the behavioral impact of coronavirus that's likely to sort of stick around. You know, we're seeing we've definitely seen a bump in voice usage in the first quarter. We're seeing a bump all across the board in contactless transactions, you know, in all the digital interactions. So COVID has certainly increased digital adoption. Someone I saw said it's like a year of or 10 years of digital adoption that's going to happen in a year.
Yeah.
You know, with this, which is a good illustration of the speed with this with which this is happening. But maybe David, you know, what do you think is going to be sort of long lasting effects of voice, and more so, you know, like the concerns about using cash, which could be a vector for transmission, and you know, how we're going to deal with contactless terminals, point of sale terminals in you know, retail interactions. You know, how do you think all that's going to pan out over the next couple of years?
Well, I'm going to take it from a standpoint of what I hope to see, and what I hope to see is that, you know, the payments industry actually does away with their entire tech stack, and because it's just so stuck in this legacy mindset.
Well, it has sort of been, and it has been iterated on, right?
But it's not fixed. Yeah, and it's been iterated. And, you know, iteration is fine. I'm not totally opposed to iteration, but if you're going to call something contactless, make it contactless. And you know, we've had these flu outbreaks and, you know, there was all these vectors, but we never really paid attention to them. And so what I think is going to happen is our lens has now changed, and it's going to be that way for the next several years. And maybe we can take advantage of this and really take things to a level of efficiency for all involved. So when you go to a store, when we still have to go to a physical store for those goods and services that we need there, we truly can start to reduce touch and what we're touching. And so things that are going to help are iterating again on our contactless technology to take it from contactless initiated to fully contactless. And for those opportunities where voice is going to work, you know, voice should work. You know, you hit a drive-through for a fast food restaurant, that's voice. But when you walk inside, you know, McDonald's spent all this money on these touch screens. I'm never going to touch those touch screens again. And so voice needs to now be inside and out. And when we talk about things like cash, you know, the United States of America is really just stuck on cash. I really don't see that going away anytime soon until the regulators finally
incentivize us to get rid of cash. Yeah.
Yeah. And also solve the issue of the regulatory pieces so that we truly can be cashless, so that nobody's excluded. And there's just far too many problems there and overreactions to when people try to go fully cashless. And so we have an issue there that needs to be resolved, and that's policymakers and regulators and the industry at large, and a lot of legacy thinking in a lot of these groups trying to protect those who are excluded from, you know, the financial services ecosystem.
And
we need to stop coddling them and allow them to get integrated. I mean, that just really needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Have you guys been watching what's happening in China with voice? Because, of course, you know, they've certainly gone cashless faster than any other modern, you know, economy. And, you know, voice is part of it. You know, you've got voice authentication on all of these networks like WeChat and, you know, Alibaba now as a voice authentication, as well as you've got facial authentication in stores. You don't have to touch the point of sale now. It's all pretty interesting.
Yeah, and some of that tech does need to filter down and come to our market, but through our and our regulatory bodies need to understand how this technology works so that we can actually get it implemented. Because far too often there's this great tech out there, but it can't be fully transplanted because we have a different society here and we have different ecosystems and far too many layers of regulatory bodies to go through. And so there's a lot of simplification that needs to happen so that we can actually implement, you know, these tools that are out there. You know, John mentioned earlier, credit unions are risk averse.
Yeah.
Well, when you're in a highly regulated industry, it's hard to jump on some of these things. And most people don't want to fight the regulators to make things better because it's costly and it slows down the pace of innovation. So you innovate where you can.
So, David, just a quick shout out to our good pal Jim Maroos, who's has been participating on Twitter with the event. So thanks, Jim. Shout out to you and your great the great work you're doing at Financial Brand and with your own podcast. You guys should all check that out. All right. So I know we've only got a couple of minutes left before we go to our moment of snark with Ron, but John. How do you want to sort of finish this out? You know, how can people sort of get in touch with you guys and, get started on a voice path?
Yeah, it's super simple. You could go to cuvoiceregistry.com. And we actually have a chat on there that's manned by Elizabeth and I and other people. So if they have questions, if you're a bank and you want to, you'd go to fivoiceregistry.com. So either one. And you can find us and talk to us about it. You could sign up right there, and literally we start working that day as soon as you sign up. So it's pretty simple.
Great. And David, anything coming up for NiPay in the near term?
Yeah, we're working on getting a virtual event out in May. So if you go to nypay.org, the information is going to be there. Get on our email list and you'll be notified. We're going to be using the Zoom platform to do our next event virtually. It'll be our first one that's fully virtual.
Fantastic. And what's your Twitter ID, David, so people can get in touch?
I can be followed at DMGERBINO. That's DM Gerbino.
DM Gerbino. At DM Gerbino. And NiPay?
And, NiPay Group.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, guys. John, thanks for joining us on the show. Elizabeth, thank you for your participation as well. And David, great job helping out on a live show today. And all the best with your work getting meals to hungry people around the tri-state area.
Thank you.
We appreciate your effort. And John, likewise with your work with the medical PPE stuff. We really appreciate that. All right, guys, here's a chat I had earlier this week with A Moment of Snark with Ron Shevlin.
So Ron and I caught up earlier in the week and we were talking about this PPP situation. The SBA loans and the debacle it has been in respect to ensuring these funds get to the right businesses. If you've been watching the news, some of the controversy around this includes the fact that for the larger banks, many of the banks have generously funded their biggest clients, and yet their smaller clients have missed out. Now, we were a victim of this prioritization at Moovin, where we had applied for a PPP facility, and we had submitted all our paperwork a long time ago, missed out on the first tranche, was told that if a second tranche of cash was available, we'd be bumped to the front of the line. But even escalating this internally within B of A brought us no joy. Even after we'd completed all of the application and told our application was going to be submitted and been received and all the paperwork had been done, we're still waiting to receive any notification that this has actually gone into the queue. And yet you see some smaller banks, we've focused on Citizens of Edmonds and others who are processing SBA loans. And I know Brian Romley, who's been on the show numerous times, has been working on this as well. And so I thought, Ron, we'd get you on to sort of discuss this. This speaks to me of another sort of basic failure of the system here, because these funds were intended for small businesses, but we're hearing about organizations like Shake Shack and Harvard and others receiving these loans. They're not exactly small businesses. And the small businesses, the mom and pop shops that really need it because of this, don't seem to be getting as much love out of this.
Yeah, I think you're spot on that, Brett. And I'll tell you, and I think this may not be a very popular opinion, but I don't actually place the blame on the banks. I mean, quite honestly, if I were a banker, I probably would have done the same exact thing and prioritized it. You know, Bank of America ended up making over $1 billion in fees from processing the PPP loans. And the way it was set up, they had every incentive to prioritize it this way. So that's number one. Number two, you know, again, I don't want to sound like I'm defending the banks or anything, but I really got to put the blame back on Congress, who did not, you know, establish good criteria. So what is a small business? You know, there was one senator who recently commented, you know, that the round two needed to go to the mom and pop shops, you know, Main Street. Well, you know, there's about 30 million small businesses in the U.S., but about 80% of them don't actually employ anybody. You know, it's not about the mom and pop. It's not about the solopreneurs. It's really about companies that that employ people. And so, you know, you can knock the Shake Shacks of the world, and I'm definitely going to knock Harvard any chance I can get anyway, but, you know, they employ people.
How do you say it in Boston?
Have it. There are no R's here in Boston. It's just have it. You pack the cat, have it. Have it yet. So, you know, what is a small business? You know, recently just, I'm actually in the process of doing a study on small businesses' accounting and payments needs. And, you know, we're going up to $50 million in revenue. And some people might not consider that. So, you know, what I think when a lot of people hear the term small business, you know, they're thinking companies that have, you know, $1 million in revenue and less. But I think that that categorization can really go up to, you know, 50 million or so in revenue. I still think that Shake Shack is a whole lot more than that. But, you know, the fundamental problem is that this was about, let's go back to the name of the program, Paycheck Protection Program. And, you know, in some respects, isn't unemployment benefits a paycheck protection program? So, you know, this is all, you know, really comes back down to me to place the blame back on Congress, you know, for not really nailing down the details. But, hey, let's play the other side of the coin as well. In their defense, have they even taken another 24 or 48 hours to reread this and get it straight? They would have been hammered for not getting the money out there. So this is a failure, as you say, but, you know, it's just so hard to have made this better. Anybody would have had a chance to shoot some slings and arrows no matter what happened.
Now, there is also issues around submission of the loan request to the SBA, right? So it appears to be, you know, a choke point with the technology as well, right?
Yeah, well, okay, now we get into the whole issues with the SBA. You know, fundamentally, in the week or two that the first tranche of the PPP loans were open, the SBA took in as many loan applications as they had in, I think, something like the prior 13 years.
Yeah.
So, yes, this was, you know, not set up. You know, they were not appropriately set up to take that kind of volume. A lot of the smaller banks complained that they didn't have enough logins to E-Tran, the system that the SBA used. So that hurt. Thankfully, you know, a couple of companies stepped up, you know, companies like MX, who created a portal to enable small businesses to get the loans through. You know, interestingly, Brett, I heard that the SBA now is actually preventing banks from using robotic process automation, RPA, to submit applications. And I thought that was pretty interesting and odd, in that they were claiming that that was creating a choke point on their end. How it was, I'm not sure, but I did see that from a credit union CEO.
I guess I can imagine if it was automated and just pinging off requests all day, that it, you know, you don't have sort of a natural load balancing just through people submitting at various times of the day. But, you know, you could imagine that in the morning there's a flurry of activity and the evening as well. You know, that'd be the typical choke points. But this all points to the fact that we do have a banking system that is somewhat, and we see this at a retail level with individuals, but we see biases in the system when it comes to credit facilities and things like that, that are now being sort of extended over. Now, I know there's not credit risk applied to this in the same way, but certainly what we faced initially when we applied for the B of A facilities, we were told because we didn't have existing credit facility, they wouldn't even process our application. Now, because the outcry on that meant they turned it around, even Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio, got into that conversation. But, you know, is part of the problem here that banks for the longest time have just not been incentivized to really support small businesses? Do you think that's part of the systemic issue, or do you think this is just a failure of process from top down?
I think somewhere in the middle, Brad. I think it's hard for me to kind of say yes or no to either end of that spectrum. I don't think that banks have been disincentivized to provide support to small businesses. I think that's almost the mission of a lot of, you know, mid-sized and smaller community banks, is to focus on those mid-sized organizations. But even still, they tend to focus more on commercial real estate lending than right. your typical small business type of loan, C&I types of things. And so, you know, it isn't about the incentive as much as, you know, just the realities of risk management. You know, with the failure rate of small businesses in Europe, you know, let's face it, most community banks are small businesses themselves. They can't go out and just fund anybody who wants to come along. They have to, you know, apply their own risk guidelines to it. Now, the non-bank lenders have really kind of stepped up to a large extent over the past couple of years to fill that gap. And I think they're up to something like 30% of funding for small businesses from a lending perspective. And it was interesting, too, to see some of the digital lenders and non-bank lenders over the past couple of weeks. There was at least one or two that I saw that, you know, had lent as much in PPP loans as they did in total in 2019. And in fact, you know, basically lending 100% of their asset base, you know, in a 2-week period time. So, you know, they're kind of stepping up a little bit. But I think this is really kind of going to change going forward, Brett. You know, I wrote this week in the FinTech Snark Tank blog on Forbes that I think that the PPP program here is really going to be a catalyst to disrupting a lot of small business banking relationships. And I think, yeah, you know, you personally and your business may not be switching your banking allegiances, but I think this is going to cause a lot of small businesses to reevaluate their relationships, turn back to smaller institutions. But, you know, the smaller banks, the community banks, have really got to step up to the plate and be able to not just provide funding, but provide good, you know, mobile digital banking capabilities, business advisory services, payment services. You know, they're going to have to step up to the plate to do it. And I think, you know, that's why you see so much market share with the larger banks, is they've got the payments capabilities and yeah, whatever, you know, accounting and financial support. So big opportunities for the community banks going forward.
Now, just to finish out, you know, you mentioned commercial real estate. You know, we're just hearing about this week is going to be a massive rent strike in New York. And, you know, you obviously got, you know, others coming out and saying that they may not return to their office space even after the economy's reopened again. Barclays CEO said that it doesn't make any sense to use office space for the bank operations for the foreseeable future. So how do you think this is all going to affect the commercial real estate portfolio from the business side?
Well, keep in mind that to a lot of the existing businesses, I mean, that's a rent issue more than it is a lending issue. But the trend has been downward for the past couple of years anyway, in terms of the shift to, you know, to e-commerce, to digital
shopping
businesses
and store yeah, closures. Yeah.
But, you know, interestingly, Brett, there are still some trends that, you know, still drive the need for you know, physical space and commercial real estate. You know, my wife and I, back when it was safe to walk around the mall, or walking around the mall and it was emptying out, you know, it's like, you know what, these things, we need to transform these malls into like senior citizen homes. Because, you know, you're a couple years younger than I am, and I'm not that old just yet, but, you know, another 10, 20 years, you know, the number of baby boomers turning 70, 80, and then into the 90s, we don't get all get killed off by this virus. You know, it's going to really change the complexity of living space.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we'll need some of that. But in the short term, the commercial real estate lending market's going to get hit very, very hard.
You know, whenever we talk about the long-term impact of coronavirus, we keep talking about this systemic reformation that's needed. It's not going to quite be the same as it was before. But, you know, I don't see as yet a lot of strategic planning or thinking, because we just don't know exactly how this is all going to pan out. You know, it's a lot of unknown unknowns, as Donald Rumsfeld would say in this. So it's obviously a question that's going to remain open. Well, Ron, thanks for joining us at this special moment of snark this week. Tell us, where can people find your Forbes presence?
In the fintech section on Forbes, or just, you know, search for Fintech Snark Tank and I'll come up.
Yep, and of course, you tweet it out regularly. You get on LinkedIn, so we'll tweet out some of those links as well. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, guys, that's it for Breaking Banks this week. We thank you for listening. And just remember, if you are listening and you enjoy the show, give us a 5-star rating, give us a shout out, tell your friends about us, tweet out your favorite show, and do something to help us out, because at this time, you know, our listenership and audience is really critical to us, given that we survive on sponsorship, and that's getting tougher to find during the coronavirus. So any help you can give us there would really be appreciated. But we'll be back next week. We have a very exciting guest for you next week, John McAfee, for our 7th anniversary show. So that is no doubt going to be a lot of fun. And I will see you again, as usual, on Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.